Good morning, everybody. Jim Wilkins here on Friday. The show is called, originally enough, Friday with Jim. And we do this every Friday. And I'm happy to have as our guest, Brett Estes, City of Astoria. Now, Brett, I know that you had to kind of adapt your schedule to be here, and we really appreciate that. Thank you.
No problem. Glad to be here.
Tell me a little bit about yourself and where'd you grow up, go to school, and all of that.
Sure. So I was born in right outside of Houston, Texas, and I lived in Texas all my life up till I was about 30 years old, and lived in far east Texas on the Arkansas border for a few years, and then family moved out to west Texas, and then ended up going to high school outside of Fort Worth.
And maybe I'm missing it, but I'm not picking up any Texas accent.
I have to say, it's one of those things that probably my good friends in junior high and high school, one was from New York City, another one was from Indiana, and I think I just didn't pick up the strong accent. Now, I do say y'all, and the month of the midsummer month is July, so there is some strong Texas accent that pops up periodically, but you're right. It's people say that, especially when I moved to Oregon, everyone was saying, we're expecting a whole lot more twang, but my father and I had really strong accent, but just really didn't rub off on me, I guess. But I went to school at Texas A&M University, and I got a bachelor's of landscape architecture. The Aggies.
Yeah.
The Aggies, yes. And then got my master's in urban planning and historic preservation, also from Texas A&M. Now, the big joke in our household is my wife, Tiffany, she went to the University of Texas, and that's the equivalent of, you know, being a beaver and a duck in the same family. And so we would have interesting Thanksgivings. That's traditionally when University of Texas and Texas A&M played each other in footballs on Thanksgiving, and until Texas A&M went to the Southeast Conference a couple years ago. So Thanksgivings just really haven't been the same since then. But I started my career working for the city of Bryan, Texas. And Bryan is a community adjacent to Texas A&M. And so I look at it as where Texas A&M University is located. It's the city of College Station. It's equivalent to Eugene. And then the Springfield equivalent is Bryan. It's maybe a little bit smaller, maybe a little bit more blue collar. I started my career at Bryan, Texas. Was there for about 4 years, working in their planning department, and started as entry-level planner and worked my way up to the assistant planning director position. And Tiffany and I were looking for a change of pace. We'd lived in Texas our entire lives and said, let's go someplace different. And said, we came out and visited the Pacific Northwest and fell in love with it, and moved out here after I got a job in Hillsboro, Oregon, and worked in the Hillsboro Planning Department for almost 6 years, and came to Astoria in 2007. So I've been in Astoria about 6.5 years as their community development director, and then got an addition added to my title, community development director / assistant city manager, about a year and a half ago. And love Astoria. It's a great community. Love the people. Love the place. No place better.
Well, just I want to talk a little bit about land use planning. And when we do that, you can kind of compare Oregon's land use planning with your experience in Texas. But in 1972, led by a group of farmers and Hector McPherson, who were a little bit nervous about development taking over their farmlands, raising the price of the property, and anyway, they spearheaded the law that became known as Senate Bill 100 in 1973, and that resulted in the land use process that we have here. So I wonder if you could comment on the implementation of that law. How is it working for us? Has it been modified since that time? And compare it with your experience in Texas.
Sure. So planning in Texas is completely different than in Oregon. And it's one of those things while I was in school, you learn about the Oregon land use system. It's right. It's something that's in textbooks, that's discussed as, it was, you know, when Senate Bill 100 was created, it was very innovative for its time to be able to have a statewide planning system where there are a set of goals that are established by the state that jurisdictions implement. Since then, state of Washington has implemented something similar. There's some other programs in the state of Tennessee and in Florida, which have taken some similar approaches. But, you know, going through school, Oregon's land use system was something that we learned about in our textbooks. In Texas, there's a little more of a laissez-faire approach to development. And interestingly enough, counties, it's illegal for counties to zone in the state of Texas. Only cities can zone. And so there's more of an incentive for, I guess, cities to be able to have an interest in what's going on along their peripheries. And there is a program that allows cities to be able to control certain types of development within a certain buffer of their city limit line. And so when the city of Bryan, and it's based upon the size of the city population-wise, and Bryan, Texas is our, as they called it, extraterritorial jurisdiction, was a 3.5-mile radius of the city. And we had control of any development that happened within that area, but even though it was in the county's jurisdiction.
You know, I've read horror stories about Houston as sprawling out, almost metastasized.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, it's Houston's extraterritorial jurisdiction is 10 miles.
Okay.
And Houston's the fourth largest city in the United States, and just the city itself is, gosh, I think it's, you know, close to 4 million. The metropolitan area is 8-9 million people. And Tiffany and I actually lived on the north side of Houston before we moved to Oregon, and her parents lived on the south side, and it actually took us about an hour and a half to drive through the city at probably 55 miles an hour just to get there, and it's that sprawled out. And freeways are, there's this one freeway, Interstate 10, which they expanded to a total, I think it has about 18 lanes of traffic.
Whoa.
And it's in my opinion, it's a little too much traffic, and I like more of a balance of being able to, you know, walk places. And Houston's it's an interesting place, but comparing it to Oregon with the Senate Bill 100 implemented state land use system, the state has a set of goals.
Right.
And
what is there, 19 of them?
Right. And they deal with everything from economic development to water resources to housing, cultural resources. All those types of issues are included in them. And it's then up to the individual jurisdictions, the cities, the counties, to be able to adopt a comprehensive plan which implements those goals and says, how are we going to address these goals in our community? So there is some autonomy that's allowed for each one of the jurisdictions to put their own flavor as to what they feel is appropriate, but you have to meet a minimum set of standards or provisions to implement the state goals. And if, for instance, the city of Astoria amends any of our comprehensive plan language, which guides any development and how we move forward, or if we change any of our laws, our zoning laws, the state has the ability to comment and to be able to say whether or not they feel it implements the statewide plan, statewide land use system. We actually have a great resource in Astoria now. Patrick Wingard is our local Department of Land Conservation and Development rep, and Department of Land Conservation and Development is the umbrella organization that deals with planning statewide. And he's been in that position for a couple of years now, and it's great to have someone who lives in our community to be our representative.
He used to be in Warrenton, did he?
He was. He was of the planner over in Warrenton, and then went over to Clatsop County and was a planner over in Clatsop County. Later on, he went out on his own and became a planning consultant and actually did some work for the city, and more recently went to work for the state.
So, the city of Astoria, how do you implement those 19 goals? What kind of structure is set up to deal with it?
So, again, it's again, our comprehensive plan provides the overall direction in terms of how we're addressing our housing need, how we're addressing affordable housing, how we're addressing environmental issues. And there are certain goals and policies. And the goals may have some aspirational statements saying that, you know, what we should be trying to reach out for to be a community that and what we should do as a community to address these various issues. And then we have our code language, our development code language, which are the laws, which says here's what you do if you're going to be building any new development. Here's what you're going to be doing if you're going to be working any wetland areas or any near any waterfront areas. We do amend our codes along the way. And if you recall, several years ago, we adopted the Riverfront Vision Plan. And we're actually in the process now, going through the process to update our comprehensive plan and our development code to be able to address those issues. Now, one thing that happens is there are laws that at the state level that change periodically, and then we have to go in and update our code as well to make sure that we're in constant compliance with the state provisions. We have our urban growth boundary within the city, and Astoria is a bit unique in that our city limit boundaries are outside of our urban growth boundary. And the urban growth boundary is the area in which development can occur.
Yes.
Where you can build houses, you can build stores, you could build offices. And our city limits expands further out from that. Most of the times, it's the opposite, where your city limit is boundaries are inside that urban growth boundary. We're a bit unique in that our city limits were established a long time ago before the Senate Bill 100 came in and put the urban growth boundary in place.
Now, I'm thinking of the Gateway Overlay Zone,
mm-hmm.
which encompasses Mill Pond development. How does that tie in with the state land use goals?
So, the Gateway Zone really centered around redevelopment of the Mill Pond area, which was the former plywood mill. And that was a case where there was a desire to be able to clean up that site and find a new use for that property after the plywood mill had closed. And it was a site that had some contamination issues that needed to be addressed. And to be able to change that from an industrial site to a residential area. We had to, first of all, we had to work through all the cleanup issues, but we had to demonstrate that the city had, there's a minimum level of industrial lands or a minimum requirement for what they call employment lands. And we demonstrated that, and then the zone could be changed to be able to allow for residential development within that area. And in that case, the Mill Pond area also kind of spurred redevelopment of some of the other areas. There was the when the fairgrounds was over where the aquatic center and the cinema are located, the Gateway area also included that portion of the city, and there were a set of design guidelines that were put in place because we wanted to be able to have the houses in Mill Pond to look a certain way, but we also wanted the area adjacent to it to have a certain architectural flavor.
I understand. Well, I'm going to take our mid-show break here and announce that this is Coast Community Radio. And I'm Jim Wilkins, and we're visiting with Brett Estes. Brett, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit now about your job as interim city manager. Paul Benoit, who left, what, a month and a half ago for a job in Piedmont. So then you were second in command, so now you are the interim city manager. What's that been like?
So it's the process. After Paul took the position in Piedmont, the city council then took action to appoint me the interim city manager. The title is listed in the charter as city manager pro tem. And the city council appointed me as the interim while they would go through the process of selecting the city manager. And you know, the good thing is that being in the assistant city manager position for the past year and a half, I've been able to work with the council on a number of issues. When Paul was away, I was able to fill in for him, and I have to tell you, this has really been an exciting few weeks. I've been in the position a little bit over a month now, and it's been fun. Still wearing the hat as community development director in the interim, so I'm sometimes going to the first floor on the planning department, working as the community development director, and then going up to the third floor as the interim city manager.
Well, you're fortunate that you have Rosemary Johnson there, who's incredible at her position.
Rosemary's been with the city over 30 years, and you know, she has such a great institutional knowledge and really can help the department just keep humming along as things progress. And I have to tell you, we have a great set of staff over at the city, and very competent staff that really are working hard and you know, really good team to be able to work with in this time of transition.
What challenges are facing you as your new position?
Well, I'm going to say one of the bigger challenges is after Paul had left for Piedmont, our finance director, Mark Carlson, then announced his resignation. He was also taking a position down in California at the city of South Lake Tahoe. And so...
Were those two departures correlated at all, or was it just kind of coincidence?
It was coincidental. I mean, Mark was Mark grew up here, lived here, and he and his wife were looking for a change, and their kids had graduated from high school, and they were moving on, and they're wanting to go do something different for a little bit. And so I understand that Mark had been looking for something about the past few months, and this opportunity down in South Lake Tahoe came up for him. So this is our first week without Mark in the office. We've been able to divide up a lot of his duties and responsibilities between the finance department staff, Julie Yule, and the city manager's office, and myself. So that's really been kind of the first big challenge is to also start taking on these new responsibilities dealing with human resources, with finance. We have John Schneider, who was the finance director for many years in Astoria, who's a budget analyst for the city now, and glad to have him to be able to help take the budget through the budget hearings that are coming up here in the next month.
Yeah, I think he's probably the only one that understands that budget.
He worked for the city and was the finance director, I think, for 20 some odd years, and so he knows the process in and out.
Yeah, he does. I sat on the budget committee for many years, and it's a very complex budget, but it's just second nature to John.
Right.
You mentioned the riverfront development up kind of past the Maritime Museum. What kind of progress are we making there?
So we received a grant from the state, again, the Department of Land Conservation and Development, last year to be able to start this code writing process. And what we're tackling first is the area between the Maritime Museum over towards 39th Street. And in the Riverfront Vision Plan that was identified as the Civic Greenway area. And we've had, I think, four Planning Commission work sessions to date where we've been reviewing code. And the challenge is to be able to find code that implements the plan for that area. And there's some areas which are gray. And so it's taking some work with the Planning Commission to be able to...
What do you mean? Define that for me.
Meaning it the plan did not have a lot of specificity. It had more of an aspirational statement saying the feel should be. The specifics would be dealt with at this point in time when we're reviewing code. And I have to tell you, the Planning Commission's had some fairly long meetings. I mean, it's a pretty detailed process when you start having to take an aspirational statement and having to put numbers or figures or percentages to be able to say, you know, a building should only be so tall, or there should be a setback of X number of feet, or what do you want the buildings to look like? And those issues are pretty difficult to do, and the commission's been hearing testimony from folks that have positions on various issues, and you know, it's looking like that we'll probably be taking something through a hearing process, you know, maybe May, June, July of this year. It'll be a public hearing before the Planning Commission. They make recommendations to the City Council where there'd be an additional public hearing.
Now, will that development include any private property?
Yes, it would. It would. And it includes the area, again, between the Maritime Museum over to the east side of 39th Street. It includes the Cannery Loft buildings, the residential buildings off of Abbey Lane. Mm-hmm. It would go over to the end of Abbey Lane from Highway 30 north over to the river.
You know, that kind of brings up one of the real difficulties in these kind of developments is that you have to somehow balance the needs of the community versus the private property rights of individual owners. That's kind of a difficult dance to do. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, I think that's what the Planning Commission's been listening to and trying to, you know, figure out, you know, where's the appropriate mark. I mean, what is appropriate to be able to say we want to be able to see within this area. And there's been, you know, quite a bit of discussion about and overwater development has always been a topic that people have been interested in Astoria through the Riverfront Vision Plan process, and it continues to be with the code language today. You know, some of the other things that are a part of the discussion is looking at the area between Mill Pond over to Safeway. And it includes actually the city public work shops and some of the land there.
What about Van Dusen Beverages?
That area is included to remain as commercial. Really the area that is on the, that has frontage along Highway 30, I'm going to say halfway to the river, would remain as commercial.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Really kind of then the northern half is proposed to be I'm going to call it a small-scale residential neighborhood. And again, the city wouldn't be necessarily, you know, building this, but it would be just putting the zoning in place to be able to allow that. And the Planning Commission's had lots of discussion about creating a cottage residential zone that would have smaller footprint homes in that area, really between the fire department, police department, all the way over to the Safeway on the north half of the block between, you know, between the fire station and Safeway.
Now that would be the Astor East Urban Renewal District?
Astor East doesn't go quite over there. The Astor East Urban Renewal District is really kind of ends near Columbia Memorial Hospital.
Ah.
And then crosses over and includes the area near the new mini mart, and then where TP Freight, some of those areas are, but it doesn't go any further east than where that the new mini mart is located.
Is there any talk about development on the west side of Astoria in the Uniontown area between, for example, the Holiday Inn Express and the port?
So one of the city council goals our prior year was to look at some design guidelines for that area to be able to have some sort of facade improvement program, some sort of incentive to help property owners, you know, do some building improvements. And the community development department staff's been working on that, and you know, we'll be looking at trying to bring something to the development commission, which deals with urban renewal issues, here in the next few months. And that's within the Astor West Urban Renewal
right.
District. Well, I'd like to be able to have some sort of incentive to kind of clean up that area, to be able to people to fix up their buildings.
Yeah, but some of the property there closer to the river is owned by the port. I would think that dealing with the port could be a real challenge.
Well, I mean, I have to tell you, we get along real well with the port staff, and you know, whenever there's new development coming in, you know, they have to get their building permits and planning permits through the city, and so we try to meet as early as possible whenever they have someone coming in wanting to do a new project to be able to, you know, make it go through as smoothly as possible while still meeting our city zoning ordinances.
You know, we're kind of running low on time, Brett, but one thing that people have been asking me about is how are we doing on defining and implementing the next phase of the Garden of Surging Waves, specifically what's probably going to be ending up being an amphitheater of some sort.
So the first thing we have to do is in the center of the block where the former Safeway store was located, you look and there's some soil in there that's covered up with some Visqueen plastic tarp. And that area, we received a grant from the EPA. There are some environmental issues we're having to address. That site was a former Oldsmobile dealership, printing press, and a dry cleaner.
Right.
And so the money that we have is for assessment and also remediation. So we're in the middle of that process. We're probably going to do some test samples here in April and May. And once we get the Department of Environmental Quality and the EPA signed off on it, you know, we'll be able to move forward. But we're hoping to maybe use some of those dollars to be able to at least clean up that whole area. Maybe even in the meantime, grade it out a little bit nicer, plant some grass, be able to make it so that it's not so much of an eyesore.
Has your engineering department taken a look at what's needed down there?
Yes, because there's
some challenges.
There's some challenges. The parking lot on the east side of Heritage Square is actually hollow underneath,
yes.
And so that makes it challenging right there when you start filling that area.
Yeah, that's where I was down underneath there. I twisted my back. Well, we got to wind it up here, Brett. Any 30-second last words for your audience?
Well, I have to tell you, we've got some really interesting projects moving forward over the next year. We've got the remodel of the senior center.
Yep.
Construction on that project we're hoping to get started here maybe later this spring, maybe early summer at the latest. But we've got about $1.5 million grant from the community development block grant to be able to do that project. And that's going to be a great thing to see happen.
Well, Brett Estes, Community Development Director / Interim City Manager, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Next week on Friday, we're going to have Karen Malin, who's on the Astoria City Council, and she's going to talk about some of the early history in the Alderbrook area. Until then, be sure and stick around for Albert Smith's always wonderful Friday Folk, and thanks for being with us.